Welcome to the RepChat Inside Stories series, conversations with creative talent and creative entrepreneurial businesses. We discover the inside stories that inspire and motivate creative people to do what they do. So welcome for everybody to the Rep Chat, and I'm really, really pleased to be in the virtual studio today with the wonderful and very talented Sandra Busby, who is a fine artist. And as we've been chatting, we have a lot to discuss about the role of art today, where it all began for her and her particular journey. She has absolutely spectacular pieces of art. So we will provide all the details about Sandra in the show notes, where you can go and find and have a look. So I'm just going to read out a couple of lines from her own bio, and this is what she says about her art. My paintings are created with my heart and soul as much as they are with my brushes and paint. Inspired by the ordinary, I strive to capture the playful light of often the most simplest of objects to make them sing. I have to feel it in order to paint it. The ability to do this is my most important tool for a successful painting, and that one that can only come from within. So welcome, Sandra.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me. It's a pleasure to come on.
Absolutely. Delighted to speak to you as well. And when I looked at this, there was something that just leapt off the screen when I looked at your work. There's so much light, and I have to say the word that comes through is really vibrant and full of life. And the pieces that you create are actually from the ordinary.
Yeah, I mean, I think with my paintings, I don't really necessarily seek out something beautiful to paint. I just notice things, and then it could be the simplest things, like, for example, my most recent painting that I finished, it's just an old crushed Coke can, which doesn't sound very interesting, really, does it? But it was one I was about to chuck in the bin after a gathering here. Somebody had a Coke and crushed the can, and as I was clearing up, I was about to throw it away, and something about it just caught my eye. I just thought, oh, I don't know whether it was the way it was catching the light, or just the unusual sort of shapes of all the folds, I don't know, but I just knew straight away, actually, that's not rubbish. That's something that I can, you know, I know that I'd get a great deal of pleasure in painting. And it's not something that I rushed off to paint straight away. I put it in a cupboard with lots of things I collect like that, until the day came when I looked inside my cupboard and thought, oh, that's what I want to paint today. So yeah, I like to sort of collect things. So there'll be a lot of junk, not just junk, but, you know, things that interest me in a cupboard in my art studio that I use for later inspiration. And like you say, it doesn't, you know, it is quite ordinary. A lot of the things I paint, it's learning to see the beauty in everything, isn't it?
I think that learning to see the beauty in everything and realizing that it's almost been repurposed. It's been used to contain something and drink it. And then you say, I can repurpose this. And it is an extraordinary piece of work. So I wanted to go back into where it all began for you, Sandra. So how long have you been painting for?
Not long enough. When I was a child, you know, like all children, loved to draw. You know, back in the 70s and 80s, it wasn't something that was very encouraged, certainly not at school, because it was kind of a frivolous thing, wasn't it? And, you know, it was sort of in the circles I was in at the time, art school was sort of classed as a bit of a cop-out, which is it's absolutely not the case, but that's what a lot of people felt at the time, you know, get a real job kind of thing. I never really realized I was a creative person. I knew I wasn't a sporty person. I was never really a particularly academic person. You know, I was good at English and writing and all those sort of creative things, but certainly wasn't, you know, any good at much else. So I guess English is actually quite creative, isn't it? So that sort of tells me now that I was a creative child. And it wasn't until, I mean, I always used to draw silly little things, you know, on scraps of paper when I was bored, but never thought of doing it in any other kind of way or useful way. It wasn't until I had my own children and they started wanting me to help them draw things, and then I think my daughter, she wanted me to paint a mural on her wall of the Little Mermaid, which I did. I think she was about six, and she's 30 now, so that sort of gives you a bit of an idea of the time. And I was creating what was actually a three-dimensional scene around her entire bedroom wall from a two-dimensional book. So in other words, you know, the book's very flat, the Little Mermaid book she was reading, everything was very cartoony and flat. And I kind of thought, oh, I want to make this as real as possible. And it was just using emulsion paint. And I had such fun doing this, I really did. And when I stood back and I looked at it, I thought, did I do that? You know, did I do that? And that kind of lit the touch paper, I guess. That was what kind of made me think, I got completely absorbed in that and I was disappointed to finish it. Then I did another one for my son and my nephews. And then eventually there came a point where I realized that I was a creative person and I needed to do something like that, because I tried all sorts of other creative pursuits. And I, you know, I love anything creative, but nothing really gripped me. So I decided I'd go and get some help, go and get some lessons down to a local art class, which I did, and absolutely loved it. I just loved it. And then I thought, you know, I like this so much that I want to learn everything I haven't. I want to do this properly. And for some reason, I felt that you couldn't possibly be a real artist unless you had a piece of paper to say, I'm a real artist, i.e. an art degree.
Okay.
So I decided, right, I'm going to enroll in an open arts degree, because I had my kids, I had to kind of do it from home. But then you have tutors that you go to see, you know, mm-hmm. you do your work, you go to see them, they tell you what they think's right, what's wrong, and that's how it works. I did the foundation course, which was great fun. But then after that, I started feeling very, very uncomfortable and stifled and hindered, because I felt as though the tutors were trying to mold me into what they wanted me to become, rather than encourage me to become my own natural artist, what was going to be natural to me. And I guess that's not, you know, if you're sort of 18 and you're at college or whatever, that's one thing. But I felt as an older artist, as a later bloomer, I didn't have time for all that. I wanted to go on my own journey and just be supported along the way, I guess. And I always remember one particular tutor, a lovely, lovely man, but he just kept saying, no, you know, instead of painting like that, put big bold black lines around it. And I was like, well, I don't want to. And then I realized actually that's how he does his work. I was looking at all his work on the wall, and he did these great big black bold outlines to everything he did, which was, you know, and it should be unique to him, but he kind of wanted me to do that. And I thought, this isn't what I want to paint. And I said to him, when am I going to learn the techniques that the old masters used to use? I want to learn how to paint. I know how to draw. I want to know how to make a beautiful painting. And he said, well, that's not really what art is about all these days. You know, if you want to do that, you need to go to Florence. Oh. He said, you know, art school these days is about being creative, being imaginative, being loose, and experimenting. And I said, so what about those old techniques? Will I ever learn them? And he said, no. He said, most of us don't even know those. So I knew straight away, I'm wasting my time here. This is just not for me. And although I think art school can be wonderful for some people, it certainly isn't wonderful for everyone. And leaving art school was actually the biggest, the best thing I ever did, really. I think joining art school was one of the best things I did, but leaving was absolutely the next best thing I did. Because after that, then that gave me an opportunity to explore the things I wanted to learn. And actually, it's quite hard to find.
Well, I think that's a really strong message, that you didn't get kind of crushed by the system. And that might have been because you were an adult learner, but because you decided, actually, this isn't for me, and I'm not getting what I need from this, which I think takes a lot of confidence, doesn't it? To, you know, imagine somebody who is in their teenagers and they think, oh, I'm not doing it right. And they might have abandoned that artistic path altogether. But what it did was kind of reaffirm what you did want to learn.
Yeah, I mean, I can't tell you how tired I got of the word loose, the phrase loosen up. Now, there is no one who admires those artists more than I do. You know, the ones you see sort of like scribbling furiously on their canvas and think, I love all that. I love abstract work. I love all those things, but it's not what I'm about. It's not naturally me. And somebody saying to me, no, loosen up, loosen up. I just kept thinking, well, what if I don't want to loosen up? What if I want to, no, that's not what I want. I don't want to draw that way. I want to draw it this way. It's definitely, I can see the reasoning behind what they were saying. But I think as a teacher or a tutor, it's also your responsibility to kind of see what that person is, can be, and what they're naturally meant to be, rather than try to
Word you used was mold and shape, rather than enabling that shape just to naturally emerge and to steer them. It started with, it sounded like, an adult intuition and inspiration, discovering what you are really looking to create. But what is your process for developing your work?
Well, I guess the worst thing I can ever do is try to find inspiration. So, for instance, if I finish a painting, I think the least likely time I'm ever going to find inspiration for a new one is if I think, right, now what am I going to paint? For some reason, that doesn't work for me at all. I can see all sorts of things around me, and I might think, oh, well, that might make it a nice painting. But what I said in my description of my art, you know, I have to feel it in order to be able to paint it. That's so true. And that starts from that moment where something catches my eye and think, I want to paint that. So I have to kind of let it come to me naturally rather than try and find it. And I'm also not a painter that can, I wish I was. I mean, I really admire those painters that have like a conveyor belt of paintings on the go. You know, they've got different paintings all around their studio, half finished. And I can't be like that. I have to focus on the painting I'm on. It has to be my favorite piece of work, you know, whatever I'm working on at that moment, I have to focus on it. I basically get inspired at the most unusual times, normally when I'm doing something completely mundane, cleaning the bathroom, that kind of thing. And actually, some of the other artists I know and speak to, they often say that when they're not trying, that's the best time to find something. So there's no set pattern. I wouldn't say, okay, I'm going to go to a gallery, or I'm going to go to this, or I'm going to go to, I don't know, whatever, to find what I'm going to paint next. It just doesn't work for me like that.
So you mentioned that there's this feeling and being engaged with the everyday and the ordinary. And as you say, even the mundane things like washing up or cleaning or doing something prosaic. Yeah. And then you go, okay, I'm ready to be fascinated by something.
But also I like the things I paint. I like to have some kind of personal connection to it. Now, whether that is the fact that crushed Coke can was going, you know, from a gathering I had in my house with someone people I knew, and it was going to go in my bin and it was my item, or down to the marbles. You know, you've probably seen on my website, I used to paint a lot of marbles. Now that has a more of a nostalgic thing for me, in that I used to play with marbles as a kid at my nan's house, and I absolutely adored my nan. I loved her so much. And I just always remember playing marbles with my sister at her house. I got left a little pot of marbles of hers. And I've added to, you know, the collection over the years, and I've got hundreds of them now. But it's just the fact that it's not about a bunch of beautiful marbles. It's what they hold for me. It's the reason I painted them that makes them beautiful to me, rather than the fact that they're just pretty glass balls which is really important. So most things if you look at the hand with the glass, you know, that's my husband's hand, and it's a glass in my cabinet in my kitchen. And so everything you see is personally connected in some way. And that would be one of the things I'd say is most important to me, that it has to have some kind of connection.
And I think it really shows in your work as well. And, and I think there's also that wonderful light and that vibrancy. I think it's maybe some of the things that you paint, such as the glass and the reflective nature of that. Something that we discussed before we started the recording button was the role of art today. And we were about to get into a really deep conversation. I said, hey, let me just turn this recording button on and let's just capture that. And you said some really, really interesting things.
Yeah. I personally think that there's never been a more important time for artists than in this digital world that we now live in. I mean, if you think about when photographs used to be printed out, we used to put them in an album, didn't we? And it's amazing. You can get them out and you can flip through the pages and they're just there for everyone to see. People don't seem to do that very often anymore. You know, it's kind of, oh, well, I'll put them on Facebook, I'll put them on Instagram, or they'll be on my phone, but when I upgrade my phone, they'll be lost, or I'll put them on a USB stick, or they're in a cloud somewhere. How do we know what happens if all of that goes down sometime in the future? We don't know where this cloud is, you know. How can we be sure that all of those photographs are going to be accessible to our children and our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren, you know, in years to come? I mean, one of the things I love is when I go around my parents' house, and sometimes they have a big old box of black and white photos, and they'll be going through them and they'll say, oh, this was your great, great, great grandmother, blah, blah, blah. And, it's lovely to have those. I don't think there's going to be much of that from here on, because people don't treasure photos like they used to, because they're very, very disposable, aren't they? They just sort of click and discard, click and discard. And I think that's why I think art in particular is something so, so special. You know, I'm talking about hand-created art, because an oil painting approached in the correct way can last hundreds of years, and it can tell a massive story about the world around us as it is now. A sketchbook, you know, can be found in a loft in 50 years by your ancestors, and they, you know, what an amazing find, what a treasure to find an actual sketchbook. It tells the story of the work, what the world is like for you now, to them in years to come. And you're looking inside of the mind of the person who created that art to some degree. You don't get that from a photograph. And I kind of think the same thing about, if you think about the difference between a handwritten letter and an email. You know, when's the last time that you received a handwritten letter, or I received a handwritten letter? And if you do, you can't wait to open it, can you? And it's strange, because if you've got the same thing in an email, it would be exactly the same thing. It's saying the same thing, but it's communicated in a completely different way. And I feel that the future of art is, I'm slightly, well, concerned about to a degree, because, you know, there's a place for digital artists. There really is. And some digital artists are so incredibly talented. They really are. But I mean, when I've tried to do digital art, I have this detachment from it somehow. I don't know why, I just feel detached. That artist hasn't really had any true connection to that piece of art. If you go onto any museum and you see a piece of art hanging on a wall, there'll be dust stuck to it from the art studio. There'll be clues as to what was going on around, there'll be the brush strokes, there'll be texture. There's something about digital art that is not quite the same. And I feel that there's a lot more digital art happening now, which is absolutely nothing wrong with that. But I do think that it would be a shame if everything went down that route completely and we lost that. Well, that art process, you know, that hands-on thing.
Well, it goes back to that personalized, that human thing that you spoke about, you know, when you were at school and what you wanted to shape and that expression. And there's also something about, as you said, you can click the button and redo things and you can make things perfect in the digital world.
Yeah.
And I wonder if sometimes art is discovered by being imperfect and through, yeah, you know, spontaneous accidents. And I wonder what comes out of that. And maybe,
oh, I think imperfections are so important because I think they are what makes us unique. I mean, every single painting I've done, I'm sure there'll be mistakes, if you can call them that, or there'll be imperfections. Of course there will. You know, you might think, a lot of people looking at my work might describe it as realism. It's not a realism art, I don't think. I would call my art a kind of romantic truth. You know, I'm trying to pull the bits of things I like out of, and I sort of push back a bit the things that aren't so interesting and beautiful. So it's not a realism. I think with digital art, going back to digital art quickly, we were briefly talking about this earlier, weren't we, that when you look at inside a painting from the very beginning of a painting to the upper layers, and we talked about that program, didn't we, Fake or Fortune?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many of your listeners would have ever heard of that program, but they are basically trying to find out who, whether the person really did create that painting. And some of the ways they'll find out, you know, the answer is by looking through the layers and seeing what's happened underneath. And usually it's a whole lot of mistakes that are just being molded to, you know, are painted over and adjusted. With a digital art, you don't get that. There's no pentiment in, there's no layers, is there? That's, I think, the beauty of art. There's a story, there's a development. And okay, you might not be able to see it without an x-ray, and to be honest, it's very unlikely anyone's going to x-ray my paintings, but I, you know, it's still been a process. And yeah, perfect, I don't think there's a place for perfection in art. I think it's perfect to be imperfect. That's how
Wonderful.
I think about it.
Okay. What are you working on at the moment, Sandra?
Well, having just signed my crushed Coke can painting, I am now in between paintings. But what I tend to do is I tend to do quite a bit of drawing and sketching when I'm in between paintings. And funny enough, my sketchbook, if you looked at my sketchbook, you'd never think it was the same artist, because it's usually full of cartoons and scribbles and people and figures, which I don't really generally include in my paintings. But yes, I'm just between, and I'm just working on things until I next, you know, clean the bathroom and think of something new.
And I know you've got a really great podcast as well that you co-host. Yeah. So you can tell us a little bit about that as well.
Yeah, funny enough, quite some time ago, probably a couple, I can't remember how many years, it's going to be 2 or 3 years ago now, I was interviewed on another podcast, doesn't actually exist anymore, but a really good podcast called Your Creative Push. And a girl called Tara Roskell, who was a graphic designer, was actually listening to that podcast. And she reached out and said to me, I've got a podcast on sort of creativity, I'd love you to come on. So I went on there and we talked for absolutely ages. We just couldn't stop talking. And of course, you know, when she was very nervous about interviewing people, actually, even though she'd done a lot of it, when the interview stopped, we did not stop talking for ages, and we kept in touch. And she said, you know, have you never thought about having your own podcast? I was like, absolutely not. I'd be terrified. There's no way. But she said, oh, I think you'd be good at it. I said, I wouldn't mind doing an episode with you. We could have fun and do an episode together. Anyway, we did, and never looked back. We then decided we'd have our own. And our podcast is all about, you know, encouraging people to just allow themselves to be artists, call themselves artists. It doesn't matter if you feel like you can't draw. It doesn't matter if you are drawing like an 8-year-old at the age of 30 when you start, or 50 when you start. You know, if the last time you drew when you were 8, that is what you're going to come up with. But it's amazing how quickly you can learn. And it's getting over that fear of being bad. If you can just get past that, because you have to be bad before you can get good at something, don't you? And so our podcast is all about trying to encourage people to get over that, not be frightened of making bad drawings, and just have fun with it. And, you know, and I think that's so important, like I was saying earlier, about people finding things later on. You know, imagine if your mum or your dad or your grandparents, they weren't artists at all, but imagine if they had a phone book that you found in their drawer and you were about to throw it away, but in that phone book you noticed they did lots of doodling and there was lots of silly little drawings and pictures. I don't know about you, but I don't think I could throw that away. It would make it into this little treasure. And they might be really silly little drawings of virtually, you know, of cartoony or whatever, but they are an artwork in themselves and they tell such a story. So, you know, people just need to stop thinking that artists are these kind of mysterious superhumans, because they're not. They just were willing to do some rubbish stuff and learn how to do what they do now,
I think, and also willing to go with it. So willing to, as you say, to not make something perfect or incredibly sophisticated. Just say, I'm going to get into this. I'm going to get messy. I'm just going to do it for the sake of doing it and see where it goes. Mm. And I think that's that spirit of creativity, you know, which I completely share with the need to keep this alive, the spirit of engaging and creating and going with it as a journey rather than the finished article and here it is and isn't it wonderful. And there's so much you can learn just by getting involved and getting engaged. So where can people find out more about you?
Well, I'm on Instagram, sandra.busby, and I suppose the best way to find me really is my website, which is sandrabusbyart.com, and Busby is spelt with an S, and you can find links to all my bits and pieces there.
So we'll put all of that in the show notes, and I really encourage the listeners to go and have a look. It's really, it's very inspiring and uplifting work that you do, and listening to what you've said about your own particular journey to encourage us to take a dive and get engaged with what we love, whether that's being writing or acting or expressing yourself in an artistic and creative manner. So thank you very, very much, Sandra.
Yeah, no, thank you so much for having me. I will just say one very, very quick thing is just be brave. Anyone out there, just be brave. You have to have a thick skin, don't care about what else anyone else says, and be brave. And just to let you know, the podcast, because if anyone does want to have a go and have some fun, it's called Kicking the Creatives.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Sandra.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Reb Chat Inside Stories series. We hope you enjoyed it. To feature your inside story, contact us at www.rebcatcreations.com or follow us on Instagram at rebcatcreations.